As a kid, and not really as a kid, more as like a teenager, somehow the idea of Angela Anaconda and Anne Frank got merged in my head.
Oh, God.
Put the fucking Tucker Carlson reaction image away. All right? No, I'm cooking here. What if we did a gay remake of No Country for Old Men? I think that would be a great idea.
I think this would be a great thing to just keep on screen the entire podcast.
That should just be like the thumbnail for this episode of the podcast on Spotify.
I'm going to like fucking get us out of this tailspin you're trying.
Well, hello and welcome to the Weeb Crew. I'm your host, Sciotic. I'm in the bat cave. Wait, how the fuck can I do a Batman accent?
Where is she?
Rachel! Oh, no. That's just veering into Bruce Wayne's gargoyle childhood friends who both hate Rachel and desperately want Bruce Wayne to buy them a PS3.
Bruce, you must forget Rachel, Bruce. You must buy us the PS3!
In like 2025, they want a PS3 because, of course, they're gargoyles. They don't have access to like the internet. They don't even know what the most modern PlayStation, you know, version, model, whatever the fuck, whatever the new PlayStation is. They're still stuck
on the PS3. Yeah.
Master Wayne, they can play Blu-rays, Master Wayne.
I'm lost in this bit.
Oh no, this was the result of Meta and I just watching either Batman Begins or The Dark Knight, because this is the only two Batman movies we watch together. I refuse to watch The Dark Knight Rises because I've never seen The Dark Knight Rises. It's not a comfort movie like the Dark Knight is or Batman Begins. And we were just watching those movies and somehow came up with, I think because like the way fucking Christian Bale screams Rachel in those movies in his Batman voice, like Rachel, fucking made us laugh so much that we then turned that into gargoyles who were friends of Bruce Wayne as kids and then hated Rachel Dawes or whatever, because they were jealous of Bruce spending so much time with her and not them and buying them PlayStation. That you interrupted my intro, by the way. As always, I'm joined by my co-host Moomy.
What the fuck was what?
What?
I don't know if I was ready for this random lore deep dive.
What?
It's
good podcast content. Literally everyone knows that the best content, you know, the best podcast, it consists of just some guy recalling like, dude, this is a funny thing that happened to me once. But he's recalling it in a way that is not remotely funny or engaging and just kind of sounds self-absorbed. You know, like a narcissistic asshole kind of thing.
Yeah.
Put the fucking Tucker Carlson picture away. You said you had a game for us because we don't have a podcast. We don't have a topic for this episode.
We could have talked about anime.
We could. You said you had a game for me. I was just gonna say like, hey, well, why don't we talk about how fucking mid this season
is. I thought we would start off and we could like talk a little bit about like the season. I didn't want to fucking just retread old episode where we already talked about this season being shit, but we could give an update.
We didn't talk about One Punch Man season 3. Is Saitama even in One Punch Man season 3?
I don't know. He's not really in the manga much of this arc because it's just focused on like Garo. So I keep
seeing people like post all these clips and shit and it's like, oh yeah, look how bad this is. I'm just like, where the fuck is the main character?
He's like very...
I've not seen a single clip of Saitama posted whatsoever.
He's very sparsely in like some of the fucking like meeting room scenes, I think, sometimes. Like he just is there for some reason picking his nose and it's just like, okay.
Because this scene, well, it seems like it's just like it's now just doing like an action shonen, like we need to go fight a bunch of monsters kind of thing, and he's just like. He's like a side character in his own story.
What else are you going to do, right? Like, how are you going to make this series 200, some, like almost 200 chapters now, I think. I think we're like in the 120s or something.
And there's one joke.
There's one joke. It's that he punched real good and killed bad guy.
He punched good, yeah.
Oh, no, no, we're in the 200s. Yeah.
It's like, it's, but, you know, but that just does not, it's not conducive to like, conventional action like storytelling basically.
I feel like obviously the direct parallel you would draw would be like to Mob Psycho, because Mob Psycho is a very similar concept, except it's not focused on the gag. It's not about like the gag of him being really
there's
strong
a lot
and powerful
more going on with Mob's character.
So like it basically takes like the aspect of Saitama of like boredom, being unhappy with your position in life or whatever for various reasons, and transplants that into a teenager who happens to be really powerful, but in ways that are not very beneficial to his like everyday life as like a, just a person.
His like personal life. His like self-esteem and stuff.
It's like, he could be like the most powerful Esper dude ever.
He could
and, like,
be literally God, but he that, literally be God. That's not what's going to bring him happiness. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That would be obviously how you would do One Punch Man.
But
I do know the webcomic. I know it touches on that subject more. I think with like toward the end, where it's it's revealed basically Saitama. I think spoilers, I guess. I don't know how
spoilers for One Punch Man.
Spoilers
I guess
for One Punch. He punches and kills. No.
He punches the guy. Himself and dies.
No,
that's how
he just gets to. Depressed. It's like the fucking scene where he's like holding a gun. And he's just holding his fucking fist.
He's holding his fist. He just punches himself in the chest. He's like, goodbye, cruel world.
He's like crying.
There's nothing
like,
left for me here. I've literally killed God.
He has his fist covering his mouth. His tear escapes the corner of his eye. It just punches himself. This is the slow.
It's just a splatter of blood, and then the credits roll, and that's just how it ends. No. He punches himself. It just cuts to black, like The Sopranos, and that's it.
No, I'm more imagining like the blood just splatters over the wall, and then like there's like a record player that just like gets knocked off the fucking turntable. It's like there's like static on the TV. It's playing like Captain Kangaroo or some shit.
Oh, so you're imagining Saitama just kills himself alone in his apartment with no one around him. And then like his roommate or whatever like comes in the next day and just finds him like the apartment is just covered in the blood and viscera of Saitama punching himself once.
Yeah. Well, that would be the implication, is someone's going to find him in that state. But no, like I don't want to see the person find him, as I'm not like that. That's a bridge too far, right? Like that's
I was going to say, like, well, what if Saitama just fought his clone? Then I was like, well, no, that's just Frieren already did that.
If Frieren already did that, it'd be fucking boring. No, yeah, I guess it's revealed.
Boring.
Spoiler, I guess. I guess it's revealed that like Saitama is a monster, and like monsters are just things that have had like a limiter removed. Because they were obsessed over something.
Oh.
So like all the like the crab man or something, I guess, was obsessed with crabs. The rhino man was obsessed with being a rhinoceros beetle. I don't like whatever.
Of course. So they're just, most monsters are just furries is what you're saying.
Right. So his transformation is even bald, but he was obsessed with becoming the strongest. And so he became the strongest. And his limiter was removed or something. Okay. Whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ending of One Punch Man, I think.
Is that the actual ending? I thought the webcomic was still going.
I don't know.
I have no fucking idea. I don't really care.
I don't follow the webcomic. I've only seen like...
My only interest in One Punch Man is because the girls are hot. And the girls are only hot in like the proper manga, not the fucking one web comic.
Yeah. It is cool. It is cool when they do like the webcomic art style for the characters in the manga, though. Okay, when it's like a comedy.
Yeah, bit. I know. Like as like gags, that's fun to see. But like, I really like. I mean, Murata's art overall is just really fucking awesome.
That's why I don't really care about. It's like a JoJo situation. Like, I don't care about part 7. I'm gonna watch it just because I like part 7. But it's like I'm not like invested in it. Where I'm gonna be like upset if it's shit because like. I don't expect the part 7 anime to be as good as the manga. Like the art of part 7 is like,
I feel like the JoJo anime in general have never looked like spectacular, really.
Part 4 looked good. I mean, it didn't look like, well, it was good, well directed. Like the color
directed, but like
the color direction was really good.
Like the animation work and some of the character drawings were really rough at points. And like I'm looking at some of the stuff, and I'm just like,
but like they made up for it with like the stylish direction, really cool transitions, shit that's like kind of lost with parts 5 and 6. And it's like, I guess objectively, quote unquote, they're better animated, but they don't look as stylish and they weren't as like interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've always said is like, if you can't like have like, you know, really like strong character animation, you can still make up for that with interesting directing choices. Like we talked about that with, what was it? Days with My Stepsister.
Or in Sakamoto Days.
Sakamoto Days. Yeah. To a certain extent, Sakamoto Days could have still had like a more exaggerated style, even like,
well, I just remember that was the exact JoJo's quote that we had in the Sakamoto Days short.
Oh, okay. I've completely forgotten that.
Yeah.
But I think like at least from what I've seen of One Punch, I mean, there's like attempts at style. Everyone keeps talking about like the disco lighting stuff for like certain shots. People seem to think that it's like, oh, they just put a filter over it when it's like,
no,
that looks like they just colored it differently. I don't think you know what a filter means. But from what I've also seen, like those like more stylish like shots are also, they also just kind of look out of place, kind of like maybe like kind of like randomly inserted in there, at least from what I've seen. So it's kind of like,
yeah, it's a bit too transparent in like its attempt to kind of gloss over the fact that it's not the greatest directed. It's like, oh, look, it's a color scene. It's like, nah. No,
sorry, mate. you need to be more consistent about this. I don't know. It is weird though, isn't it, that One Punch Man? Like, people obviously complained about season 2 when season 2 came out, and as far as I'm aware, season 1 was basically achieved because the director. What's his name? He directed like Sunny Boy and shit. Shingo Natsume basically pulled in like, you know, it just involved like pulling in a ton of favors, and the whole production was more or less like a lightning in a bottle. Can't really replicate that.
Well, that's a lot of productions. Like when people talk about budget, that's not that, like a KyoAni production budget is not really any different than like a standard A1 Pictures budget or Madhouse or what, like,
not generally, like there are exceptions obviously, but
yeah, they're exceptions, but like generally that's not the deciding factor. It's usually the directing, and like if they're able to pull,
well, it comes
certain
down to a
talent together,
of like the amount of time that you have, yeah, people that you can pull in, you know, can you get, you know, like a big name animator, or maybe you have an animation director who has like a lot of connections, knows a lot of people and can drag them in.
Obviously, KyoAni has that built in because of the way that they've developed their studio talent.
They just do everything in-house. And my impression is generally that, like, it doesn't really matter what the project is. Animators, people will come onto a project just because they like working with other people who are already involved on that project.
Yeah.
With that being said, though, One Punch Man is a pretty successful manga from what I understand, isn't it?
It seems to be. I mean, they made it twice. Like, yeah. It has to be somewhat successful.
it's weird to me that, like, you do end up getting a production like this for a property that is this successful. And it makes me wonder, like, I mean, people say like, oh, the anime staff doesn't care. And I don't think the anime staff doesn't care. It comes across more like the people who are in charge of the property, like the intellectual property as a whole, the One Punch Man franchise, if you will.
The One Punch Man, really the one extended universe. About
the anime? Yeah.
No, yeah, like, it's definitely like the production side that wouldn't really give a shit. Like, yeah, obviously,
it seems like, well,
there's no
know,
animator that is on a project that doesn't care about like the shit they're putting on there, because like they want the shit to look good too. Like, maybe, okay, no, yeah. I say none. I'm generalizing that, you know, maybe there's like one or two people or whatever in a fucking production.
Sure, some people just don't give a shit.
But they're a minority. But like, the reason why shit looks the way it does is because, like, they're not able to, like, get shit, like, planned well enough.
Properly organized, even.
Yeah, if it's
like,
whether it's...
The one shot that we saw where it was, like, all the characters, like, lined up. It was, like, this big, like, impactful shot. All the characters lined up, but they're not properly... Like, the perspective with the background was wrong, basically.
And yeah.
That comes down to like a layout issue, basically, where like the character drawings, the character, you know, cells essentially, and the background are not merging properly, for lack of a better term. That's a much more like fundamental issue than just, oh, they didn't care, they didn't know what they were doing. It's much more like, oh, there are like planning problems here.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't say I'm like super fluent in fucking production procedure or whatever, where I could point to any specific thing. I just know when people are like, oh, it's a budget, they don't give enough money. It's like, that's not necessarily
like, what
the case.
What are you talking about?
Like, there is an element of that, but it's like not
right.
as major as like people like the
like meme. I know like Netflix anime. Like, Netflix has had, like, a thing where, like, they're kind of, like, lowballing how much they can pay for a production to get, like, you know, for, you know, Netflix original show. But, yeah, generally, you know, on an episode-by-episode basis, most episodes of TV animation cost about the same in Japan. And also, it's partially just due to the fact that every like, because what's the studio? JC staff, but it's almost certainly not just JC staff working on the show. I assume it's every TV production, by and large, has other studios working on it. The anime industry is incredibly collaborative, and that's enabled by the fact that every anime studio has the same production pipeline. It's incredibly standardized. So it's just like, oh yeah, we can, you know, get this studio to handle like this component or this episode or yada, 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 and, you know, spread the workload around a little bit more. But obviously that takes a lot of time and coordination and planning. And when that's not up to par, you run into problems.
Yeah. Very, very much the case. I know sometimes they will like do basically like a bid for like kind of a popular property, where it's like, hey, we're looking, a production company's like, hey, we were looking for someone to adapt this series into an anime. You'll get merchandising opportunities because you're doing the, you know, the anime adaptation. And so like studios will then kind of like basically bid out like, hey, we can do it for this much. And I don't know. I mean, it's obviously different when it's, they have like a established relationship, like the production company has established relationship with the studio that's adapting it. So given, I think they swapped studios. Like, is this the third studio?
No. Season two was JC staff as well.
Okay.
Season one was Madhouse.
Season one was Madhouse. I couldn't remember if they, I know JC staff did season two. I couldn't remember if this was also JC staff.
This is still JC staff. Yeah.
So I don't know how that goes as far as like from season two, one to two. I don't know if they were bid it out or like after Madhouse was like, we're not interested.
People said
whatever.
Like, oh, they've had like five. You know, people basically think that they've had the amount of time since basically season two ended to be working on this. And it's like, that's also not how these productions work. I would imagine that the project was greenlighted only a couple of years ago, basically, probably roughly around the time when the season was announced. And even then, animation, because then there's like a lot of like pre-production work, a lot of planning work. Who knows when the actual animation process started for the show.
Right. It's ultimately, it's like a disconnect in how we in the West perceive, I guess, anime in general, and like how the industry itself perceives anime. They perceive it as like marketing material and advertisements for the source material. So they're not necessarily worried about the anime itself as much, because they're like, oh, well, because obviously manga is a much bigger thing than anime in Japan, right? Because you go out on the street and you buy like a fucking $5 issue of the weekly shit, or like you can buy a volume for $1 book off or some shit. It's much more like plentiful, so it's cheaper. That's mainly the kind of consumption a lot of people do. And then the anime is just like, I want to watch this.
I think animated. More people, at least younger people, are probably reading online now.
Right. In general sense. Yeah. Like back when it was kind of established, I should say. It comes off as mainly people are consuming the thing through the manga. So like the anime is just more like, oh, I'm going to watch this part, Sakuga cut or whatever that I like.
Yeah. I'm wondering, because I haven't, all the backlash I've seen, I'm going to be real, it's just basically just been like that fucking Nicholas Light guy and no one else, basically.
Twitter brain rotted. I have seen people complain about it on like a.
Well, sure, but not like seething.
Right.
Yeah, anger. Like, I'm wondering what is the Japanese reaction to the show? Probably not as negative as that new host on a movie, I'm gonna be honest.
Oh no, it can't be. Like, I feel like the host.
Did you hear about
the
fucking shit with that fucking new host of a movie?
Yeah, I've seen like people saying it was it's written.
Japanese people are usually a lot like they come across a lot more milder. Online, at least from what I've seen, they're not as like brutally vitriolic as us Americans. But at the same time, they will say something very polite, you know, at least comes across as, we'll say, more polite. But you can tell like it is like conveying a degree of spite that is kind of ends up being lost in translation.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to, because I think that host of a movie comes to theaters in the U.S. this month, like later in December. So get ready to go back to the theaters, Moomy.
Oh, my God.
Did you watch Belle? Have you seen Belle yet?
Nope.
I guess I could watch it this weekend. It's an okay movie. It's not. It's very.
I thought it was really weird that he wanted to make a movie off of Belle Delphine.
Everyone made that. You are so late to the fucking party with that joke. I don't even know where to begin with that.
What joke?
Everyone fucking you shut the fuck up.
Are you saying everyone had a turn that. With Belle Delphine?
Everyone what?
Are you slut shaming Belle Delphine? You're saying everyone had a turn?
Absolutely.
With her?
yeah, absolutely. 100%. Everyone but me, it turns out. I didn't get that notification on my phone, unfortunately. So
we all miss out on things in life.
I miss out on the Belle Delphine orgy. You miss out on seeing that fucking Ryotaro Nakamura cat movie that was playing in Dallas.
Yeah, you know that's about equal.
But we're not gonna miss Scarlet, right? Get ready for the Scarlet review. I'm gonna imagine it's. I don't think it'll be terrible. I'd be shocked. I mean, I'm gonna be honest. I did not really like Summer Wars.
I haven't liked a lot of Hosoda's movies. Like, Wolf Children's pretty good.
I've not seen a lot of Hosoda. Like, I've seen
Summer Wars is fine. The Girl Who Left Through Time is probably in the middle of those two.
I liked Summer Wars up to a point. I think it was basically like the last act where like the AI is like, I'm going to nuke the world. I'm like, oh, I was kind of hoping it wouldn't do that.
I was hoping we were more going this direction.
Yeah.
Boy and the Beast was probably his worst one for me of the four I've seen. I don't think I've seen any other ones.
Yeah. What about, yeah, because what are you, Mirai? I haven't seen Mirai.
Oh, no, I did see Mirai.
Okay.
That one.
Mirai Carey?
Yeah. It's December. You had to watch, you know, Mirai Carey.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know. I'd probably put that at two. It's probably around Wolf Children.
It's like your second favorite.
Yeah, I like Mirai. Like, I like the.
Okay. I mean, you said two. I was like, oh, you mean like 2 out of 10? What the fuck?
Yeah, no, I like Mirai. It's mainly just like the vibe. Like, I mean, it's got the fucking. Who's the guy that sings the fucking. The music track is a album that everyone likes.
The music album everyone likes. What the fuck are you trying to say? What are you talking about?
That guy, you know. Everyone likes
this. No. Wait, was Mariah also a musical? Because Belle was a musical.
No. It was not a musical, but it had a lot of. Because it's very nostalgic. Because she's like from the future, so she goes back in time.
Okay.
It's a fucking famous album. Fucking people are gonna fucking mob me because I have
no idea. Yeah, like, what is it related to the movie or something? Mirai album. What the fuck are you like? I have no idea. I have no clue.
That's the ending song. Who's the fucking guy's?
Kira Kosimura? I don't. Well, we gotta figure this out now. Mirai ending.
Tatsuya Yamashita? Is that what it is?
Okay.
Yeah. Right on time.
What do you mean right on time? That took so long for you to figure out.
Right on time. He does like all these fucking city pop things. The people like.
Yeah. Okay.
Fuck. That took way.
That took way too goddamn long.
Cut that. Cut that.
No. That's all fucking staying in. I'm scrambling and be like, who the fuck are you talking about? I think I may have seen Belle dubbed now that I'm thinking back on it, because I think what happened was I met up with a friend to go see it at a theater. And the time that we had agreed upon was a dub showing.
Wait, a musical? I think I just watched. A dubbed musical?
Yeah, I think. Did Hunter Schafer voice the main character? I don't remember. I think so, maybe. But I can also not remember. I don't remember the voice acting at all. And whether or not it was in Japanese or if it was in English, if I'm going to be honest. All I remember is that, like, again, the last act of the movie was just like. What a weird direction to take this movie in. Okay, I guess we're just doing this now. All right. It's a weird movie. Yeah, we'll watch it. We'll watch it this weekend, and we'll talk about it next week or something. Because, yeah, not a bad movie, but it was also, I think, Scarlet. This new movie is supposed to be like much darker. And more serious, so I'm gonna like be taking it seriously. And if it ends up like fucking it up, then I'm just gonna be like, okay, this is actually annoying now because I don't really have anything to really like latch on to, like character wise, like because like the characters in Belle are still like entertaining and endearing to watch. Whereas like if it's gritty, grimdark fantasy, it's gonna be like, okay, this is gonna be harder to get like, you know. Invested in these characters.
Yeah, I can get that.
Is there any other movies? No, the only other Hosoda movies I've seen, besides Summer Wars and Belle, would be the two Digimon movie, like the original like Digimon short film, and then Our War Game. Though I've seen them like the individual, like as they originally were, not the weird like mashed together four kids.
Didn't see
thing.
The Digimon movie.
I've
With
not
Angela
seen
Anaconda.
No. I didn't want my parents to get divorced.
That's such a fucking schizo. Angela Anaconda made my parents get divorced.
Angela Anaconda made my parents get divorced. Can we go back in time and like prevent Angela Anaconda from being a thing?
I mean,
I don't know how. I don't know how. And maybe.
I don't hate Angela Anaconda enough that I'd want to waste going back in time to stop it from existing.
I feel like as a kid, and not really as a kid, more as like a teenager, somehow the idea of Angela Anaconda and Anne Frank got merged in my head.
Oh, God.
I think it's because the animation style in Angela Anaconda is like they have like the like not black and white faces, but like they're like blue or something. And then that picture of Anne Frank just ended up getting superimposed onto that as a result. I don't know how.
But that's a fucking cognito hazard. Why? Why am I imagining Angela Anaconda, the Digimon movie, with Anne Frank's face?
I think that's a wonderful image. I think Anne Frank would have loved the Digimon movie.
I mean,
what was this? What?
Her parents getting divorced wouldn't have been the worst thing to happen to her.
Oh, no. What was this game that you had an idea? I guess we've really just completely lost anything to talk about as a podcast now if we're having like a game segment.
All right, no, the game. All right. So this is a game, right?
You know how many anime podcasts have like game segments?
No, it's not a game. Okay. So the game is we're going to go through our anime lists.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Find random anime and we're just going to sell it.
Sell it? Okay. Oh fuck. Well, this is going to be hard if like what if like I scroll through and it's an anime I don't like.
Yeah, sell it.
Okay, or half of these I'm just going to be like, oh, this is an OVA I barely remember because I watched it like 5 years ago. Gotta sell it, okay.
I mean, we are the judge.
I ended up on Suridori Children. Okay, I remember Suridori Children well enough. It's like a cute, like, just romance. It's like a TV show. Yeah, the episode's only 13 minutes long.
I don't think I've seen this
one. And it's basically just... Like it's an ensemble romance more or less where you have all of these different couples that you like each episode focuses on like a different couple and then it'll like circle back and we'll see like, okay, well this is where this couple is at now. And then the next episode will be, this is where this couple is at now. And this is what they've got going on. Yada, 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 yada. And it's very tropey. It's a very like tropey kind of romance. So they have like every different kind of like dynamic you could imagine, you know, like the more like lovey-dovey stuff, the more like tsundere girl, things along those lines. Basically it's a cute little story. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Unconventional aspects of the show. Something that I could like latch onto is like, oh, this is kind of intriguing.
I don't remember.
I mean, I guess like the immediate, like it. So is it just like focus on different people and you just like randomly kind of just like in media res get put into like a situation? Like, I'm just imagining.
Yeah, it's basically just like different, like,
and like something like it's basically mundane like happens,
different, like,
and it cuts like to like common... another couple. And they're like in the middle of like a battlefield or something. It's just like,
no,
what
it's
the
basically
fuck was
just
going?
Like different romance. No. It's more like because you have like all these like different codified scenes and situations, you know, like the classic, like, you know, wall slam kind of thing. You know, you wall slam, you slam the girl that you like into a wall enough.
And what's that, Kobudan? Is it Kobudan?
Is that what it's called?
I think it's Kobudan.
Yeah.
Kobudan.
So it's basically just different vignettes of things like that. These different like tropey kind of interactions that you get, you know, that if you've seen enough romance anime, you are like aware that these are like codified like ideas, tropes, essentially. And there's nothing else really going on outside the scope of that. It's just these very simple ideas that you kind of like look at that and go, aw, or that's nice, or I want to kill myself. I wish I wasn't alone.
I mean, that's every romance anime. Well, never mind. I can't
say. No, because
a lot of them, I don't really give a shit about the couple.
True. But like, this is like stripping away like all of like the extraneous shit. So there isn't really like any sort of like overarching plot, or like, I don't really remember any, like there isn't really like a ton of drama or anything like that, because it is like focusing on like all the of these different couples, all these different dynamics. As a result, none of them are particularly like depthful or fleshed out on their own, but it does a very good job at just kind of evoking certain feelings in just a very kind of like fleeting way. Again, it's only like 13-minute episodes.
So this is like a short. Okay.
Yeah, you know, this is like a TV short. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, that makes it sound less interesting that it's a TV short. I mean, that's probably appropriate.
It's not like a 2-minute episode. It's like 13-minute episodes. So like they're half episodes, basically.
Okay. Let me try to find one. I'm kind of like randomizing it, but I'm also like trying to not do one that
I don't know how. I'm like just kind of like scrolling through.
I landed on Poopa from 2019, which is a music video.
Oh God.
The movie. Oh, it's the Koji Yamamura one. That was pretty good.
Okay. Not the 2013 Poopa. I thought you meant Poopa, like the fucking eating girl cannibalism thing.
No. The short, yeah, from
Koji Yamamura. Yeah, the one that feels like it should be like a trailer for something more.
I think a Puparia?
Puparia. Oh, wait. What are you talking about then?
Poopa.
You Poopa.
It's literally the same title as the other one from 2014 or whatever.
Okay.
But this is movie.
No, I've not seen this. Oh, you said Koji Yamamura, and I was thinking like, oh, he directed this. No, he just has producer credit, because he has producer credit on much shit.
Ishidate Namiko.
Yeah. Has she done anything?
She did animation director stuff. On Answer Cat.
It's Kananzu, key animation on Cocoon. Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's not
Penguin Highway.
There's not lots. It's a 3-minute animation short. It's got an interesting little theme to it about like coming out of your shell or whatever.
Okay. That would seem to be implied by the title.
Yeah. I mean, she comes home and just I'm flowering. I don't know. She's been deflowered. It's got cool imagery. It's not really what. I'll find another one. Hold on.
Okay.
That'll be an odd. It's hard to sell that one. It's like 3 minutes long. Oh, Matsurika. Perfect. I mean, have we actually ever talked about Matsurika on here?
I feel like we have. I feel like we must have, right?
I feel like we had to have mentioned it. We actually just rewatched it. Try to explain
what it is.
I actually just rewatched this in Shabes' server back on his birthday. We watched.
I need to buy it on DVD still, which the idea of it being on DVD is really funny to me.
It is very funny.
So I guess describe why it would be funny. What is Matsurika?
Matsurika is like just lines and ambient noise.
It's really hard to describe.
I think the way it was achieved, I think it was like they made a bunch of drawings and then overlaid it or something, and it became like this weird texture.
Yeah,
I think
so, yeah.
It does have like... It's very avant-garde. It does have like emotional direction, like a sense of pathos, because there is like... It's not just like static lines and noise. It does kind of have ebbs and flows. It does get a little bit, have like a bit of a crescendo, and then like all that shit.
You can pick out some kinds of imagery from it.
It's one of those. This is literally like a fart sniffing anime.
No, yeah. Yeah, because, like, there's no... There are no characters. There is no story. There's
a story.
It's you're basically kind of looking into a void, almost.
You're looking into the void. I remember when we originally watched it, I was like, what the fuck is this? And, like, we were making fun of it for, like, the first 7-ish minutes. But by the way, this is, like, a 30-minute thing. This is not just, like, turn it on for five minutes. Yeah.
But I distinctly remember this because the group watch that I set this up in that we watched Matsurika first, and then we watched The Island of Giant Insects.
Why did we decide those two? Is it because of the cover?
Oh, because I decided because I thought it would be funny.
I think the funniest thing about Matsurika is the cover for it, how it sells. Like, I don't know what the fuck it's selling. There's none of this discernible imagery in this fucking short.
No.
Unless it's literally just a drawing and it's like zoomed in so far you can't fucking make anything out and they took all the color out of it. I guess that's possible.
But yeah, I don't even know if it's available online anywhere. I don't think it's on like any of like...
It's on YouTube.
The way that I got it is it was on Vimeo and I actually bought it from Vimeo and watched it there.
I think you can find it on YouTube now.
Okay.
Because Shame's able to find somehow.
And not Hayden's shitty 60 FPS interpolated TikTok edit or whatever the fuck.
Family Guy funny moments.
Family Guy funny moments.
But yeah, I remember we were clowning on it and like laughing at it for like the first 7 minutes. And like, you kind of are like, oh my God, this is going on for so long. And then it's like almost like...
It does it so long that you...
It circles back around... We were like, actually, I kind of like this. I don't really know why.
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you do that for like 5 minutes and like, that's cute. But you do it for 30 fucking minutes. And, you know, suddenly it's like, okay, yeah, you're making a statement by doing this. Because it is like difficult. I guess I would say it's like the anime equivalent of listening to swans.
Listening to swans. Yeah. That's probably pretty accurate. So
if you like swans, go out and find Matsurika. I have something that we could talk about. This is one we might enjoy talking about. I pulled up A-Girl.
Oh, A-Girl. I didn't talk about that in the video.
I guess fun fact for anyone who like listens to this podcast on YouTube, the intro like edit for the podcast, you know, with all the visuals and stuff. If you ever wondered where the bit of a guy just punching the shit out of a girl came from, it's from A-Girl.
It's from A-Girl. That was like, were we, I don't remember. Did we have like audio on in the call when we watched that one?
Oh gosh, I don't remember at this point. I think I could very easily imagine you just dying of laughter though.
I can imagine the laughter and everyone going what, but I can't remember if that was just in my head because I can just imagine it or if it actually
happened. Don't remember either.
We always mute.
We usually mute for our group watches. I would have to go back and check and see like if when we were watching this were people saying things in like the chat or not. But what is, I guess, is it, how do we describe A-Girl? It's basically like, what is this? Like, yeah, 30 minutes. This is a romance OVA, but there's no dialogue. Maybe very little dialogue. Maybe there's
a 30-minute city pop AMV.
Yeah, the whole thing is basically just like, not like a music video in that is, oh, it's just one song. It's a series of songs.
Yeah.
But it's, man, it's not is like, it ever like.
It's not like, it's not like Interstellar 5 or 5-5.
No.
It's not like that because they kind of conform the story around the music. It's not like this is like, maybe it's showcasing some music, but it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel like an album. It feels like it's just a dialogue-less OVA with like music featured. But it does go really well with the visuals and aesthetic.
It does. I think because I don't really remember a lot specifically about the story, but more so just like the experience of watching it and just kind of like vibing with it. Because it is a very like This was like back during like the early days of the group watch. We were watching like a lot of like 80s like aesthetic kind of stuff. And this very much embodies that. Is this from the 80s? Hold on. No, it's from 1993. I'm sorry. I'm a hack. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Podcast over.
Podcast over.
I just have to talk by myself because I'm the only one that's not a hack. I didn't say this was the 80s.
I would strongly recommend it to anyone who likes city pop or that city pop kind of aesthetic. Go and watch. It's probably on YouTube. You can find it. It's I don't think it has an official release. Realistically, it never will, because I don't know how you market this very well.
This is a shoujo manga adaptation, which it'd be interesting to like go and read the manga, because it's not like this is devoid of a story.
Right. No, there is a story. I do remember there being a story. I just don't really remember much of what that story was.
It's mainly just like she's dating an asshole. Who then is like, it's basically a toxic relationship, and she meets this young rapscallion who's still rough around the edges, but like has a heart of gold kind of character or whatever, and starts dating him. They start having fun doing modeling stuff because he's like a male model, very fashionable. And then like he gets into a fight and gets stabbed at one point, and it's one of those kind of stories.
I'm surprised you remember that much, I'm gonna be honest.
Oh, you don't remember like her going up to his poster and it's got like the little scratch on, like not in the picture, but like the poster scratch, and it's supposed to be like, oh, I he's been marked, his face is damaged goods or something, and then she meets him in the fucking train station. You don't remember all that?
No, I really do not. When did we watch this? This was like how many years ago?
Not that long ago. It was like
2021. This is nearing 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's only 45 years.
I do not remember this much of this 30-minute OVA that we watched in January of 2021.
Do you at least remember like the beginning part where their like apartment catches on fire, and that was the whole? That's why she ends up meeting the guy, because she has to move in with her friend.
All I remember now is like her getting decked in the face, because I've seen it like 100 times.
I remember all that. There you go. There's your cell.
There's your cell. Do you have one pulled up? If not, I have a fun one to talk about. One that I actually remember.
Oh, I had this one.
Kiss me while something pretentious again.
Shite?
Have I seen this one? I feel like.
Is it Kiss Me, Not Him? What? I forget what the English one of
this is. Wait, or no. I'm mixing it up with Kiss Him, Not Me.
Oh, yeah. That's the Fujo one.
Yeah, that's the Fujo one.
Kiss Me on the Apple of My Eye. I don't even have this marked on my anime list. I haven't marked on any list. I can't sell this one. I don't remember it.
I'm looking at my note. I'm looking at my note on anime list. Here's what I have to say. Cute romance, but I don't really have much to say beyond that.
I gave it a 4, so that explains why I don't.
A strong 5 to light 6.
That's okay. I will not.
We watch this? This is September of 2021. You can tell what we were watching in 2021.
Yeah, a lot of romance shoujo shorts.
Maybe Hayashibara voices singles, the main character.
Pops.
Here's one we can enjoy talking about: The Troubled Life of Miss Kotora.
Kotora-san?
Yeah, Kotora-san.
Oh. I was trying to voice stuff I think we've talked about, because I think we talked about that in the 2013 podcast. But I want to say
the best sell we could give for this show is to say, just to go watch the first episode.
You don't have to watch anything else after that. Just watch the first episode.
Just watch the first episode. It is horrific, and it's one of the funniest fucking things I think I've ever seen. I just heard fucking like screaming and crying in the rain, and I'm like dying of laughter at how fucking over the top the suffering is.
Did I talk about Flag?
And then after that it's honestly just pretty nice, like kind of healing, like school comedy. I like it for the most part.
Doesn't it have like she can read minds or something in that part of it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's why everyone hates her. She can read everyone's minds.
Yeah.
And the only guy who doesn't hate her is
her grandpa.
So fucking stupid that like her reading his mind just yields nothing.
There's literally nothing like, going on upstairs.
Yeah, those are that's basically their like dynamic.
And what if that's trying to say something?
Well, it's her basically, you know, flirting to because she has trust and like trust issues for reasons that are very clear if you watch the first episode. So the other half is like the other element of the show is her basically being like rehabilitated and learning to make friends as a result. And, you know, learning that not everyone is a monstrous asshole.
Not everyone's a fucking dick.
A fucking horrific piece of shit.
Listen, there are dicks and there are assholes, but there are also pussies.
The ending I would say is maybe like a little bit controversial. I don't know how I feel about the ending of the show, but it's really nice overall. It's like the first episode is comically over the top and how fucking just how much suffering there is, and the rest of it is just, yeah, this is actually like, oh, it becomes like an Iyashike, basically, in a certain sense, because it's like we've now we're recovering from that first episode for the duration of the rest of the show. The main girl's grandfather is also base and awesome.
I remember the grandpa.
Yeah, he has like a big mansion and just buys her a bunch of stuff. Yeah, he's cool.
Did we talk about Flag? When we did the,
I've not seen Flag.
When we did the underrated thing, I don't think I talked about Flag, did I?
No, I think you did.
Did I
feel like you did.
Oh well.
I'm like thinking back on it. I think so.
I think I did. I know I haven't talked that much about Tamayura. I think I've mentioned.
I guess not.
It. But yeah, I really like Tamayura. It was one of those where it was like, I watched the OVA, and the OVA was fine, but it was more like, this is definitely a series that's more conducive for like the longer format, because it's one of it's like an aria, right? It's like an Iyashike. You're supposed to like kind of get immersed into it, watch it every once in a while or whatever, and kind of get into this like long form story. I feel like the OVAs were fine, but they didn't really like get me into that element of it, so it took me a long time because I think I watched the 4-episode OVA back in like 2015 or 16 or something, like a long ass time. I can probably just look, and I've only just watched the rest of it like recently. Oh, it's not gonna tell me when I fucking added it. Oh well. But I watched, I mean, I think we're on the podcast, I think, when I finished it. But I really like Junichi Sato's kind of directing style, especially for like Iyashike stuff. I don't think this was as strong as Aria, just because Aria is Aria and you have like a culmination of his directing and the manga's writing.
What is Tamayura about?
It's about a girl whose dad dies, and all she has to remember him by is this camera that they used to take pictures with. And so she kind of like retreats into herself and becomes kind of introverted for a while until she kind of is able to like
Nickelback.
This is a Nickelback. Until she's able to kind of get over the grief enough to where she can encounter these like aspects of her father and not like torment her essentially. And so she had all these friends that were back in her dad's hometown, 'cause she used to go there every summer. Or I say friends, I think it's basically like one that she knew back then or whatever. But she hadn't gone back there in a long time. So finally she gets to a point where she's like, you know, I kind of want to go to school in my dad's hometown because I want to kind of feel closer to him. And so it's kind of like this, it's established as like a kind of a healing journey where she's kind of re-encountering her friends. Kind of coming across these like memories and stuff like that she had with her dad that she had kind of forgotten because of that trauma and because it had been so long, because she was so young when it happened. So it's like her, and like it has the premise of like her taking pictures as kind of like the excuse for the vehicle, the story, to kind of like have her go around and find these places, because she's like, she picks up the hobby of taking pictures because she has her dad's old camera. She wants to kind of feel closer to him by kind of seeing the world how he kind of saw it when he was still alive. And mm-hmm. in her pursuit of like taking these pictures and kind of trying to immortalize these moments, she kind of finds her dad in this town and in her life, and kind of comes to this understanding that like, just because her dad is gone doesn't mean he is like forgotten or completely gone. You know what I mean? No one's ever really gone, right?
No one's ever really gone.
But she goes to these like places. She's like, oh, this would be a great picture. And she like will show up there and she's like, oh, this actually looks familiar. And she'll realize that this was a place that her dad had taken her to take a picture when she was like 3 years old or something. And then like there's times where she finds places that her dad actually like wanted her to find when she grew older and stuff like that. So it's really nice. Like, it has like the underlying kind of commentary on like different perspectives. Obviously you have the healing element and stuff like that. I really like when they kind of get more into, like, not necessarily into the photography on like a mechanical aspect, like they're not getting that sweaty with it, but they kind of get more into like, what people kind of focus on. Like, some people focus on stuff in like the foreground or like something on an object in the background. They're like, there's a part where they're taking a picture of a tree.
When the horizon's on the top, it's interesting. When the horizon on the bottom, it's interesting. When the horizon's in the middle, it's boring as shit.
Thanks, David Lynch.
You're welcome.
But no,
my pleasure.
It's I like, because like there's like that where they're taking a picture of a tree and like they're all kind of focused on different things. There's also like a cafe where people would always take pictures. Like, have you seen those islands where it's got like a little tree and a shrine in the middle of like a little river?
Oh yeah.
There's like one of those, and people like just decided they wanted to immortalize it or take pictures. And so like there's a cafe that has like all these people that have taken different pictures or drawn it over the years. And you see that even though they are taking pictures or like drawing the same thing, obviously time has like changed the stuff around it and like changed how you can see the objects. And so you get all this kind of like interesting commentary in that regard. If anyone's curious why it's called Tamayura, Tamayura is the name for like the orbs in pictures in Japanese, I guess. Whereas like in, I guess here we think they're ghosts. You get a bunch of orbs in your picture, like, oh, I'm fucking haunted. And
dude, take a look at this. Dude, listen to the CVP.
If I'm going by what Tamayura.
Well, do you hear that? The ghost just called me a racial slur.
We didn't just watch Ghost Adventures last week, did we?
Okay. We should just have an episode. We just watch Ghost Adventures and be like, this makes no fucking sense.
But really, that was really what Tamayura was missing, was like a Ghost Adventures episode where they go to like an abandoned prison and she's taking pictures and there's orbs everywhere.
And then it's like, the prisoners, you know, they were really fucked up. They wanted to murder the guards. The guards, by the way, would like strap the prisoners outside in the freezing cold and douse them in water. And then, you know, they would freeze to death, chained to the wall.
They would literally waterboard the prisoners. I have no idea why
the prisoners would then want to kill their captors. It's like, wow, that's so nice. Click.
But Tamayura is, I guess, like the orbs and pictures, but they... If I'm going by what the show says, I guess they kind of view it as more like happiness. Like, oh, there's like a happy moment being captured. That's why there's like orbs. It's like happiness being captured in film or something.
Oh, okay.
So that's why it's called Tamayura.
See, I never would have learned that from Ghost Adventures.
Yeah, Ghost Adventures is directed by a hack. It's not Junichi Sato.
Junichi Sato directed episode of Ghost Adventures.
Well, hey, what do you got? You gotta follow that up now.
Well, I have something. I don't remember it being very good, but it's noteworthy for one reason. Yumekara Samanai.
That sounds. Do you remember familiar. This?
It's the Shaft OVA from like 1987. About
the weird like two episode one?
No, it's only one episode. It's a dude who like has a crush on the girl and she's like a prostitute or porn actress or something.
Samanai. Yumekara Samanai.
Yeah. This is like early Groupon. You gave this a 3 out of 10.
Oh, that. Yeah. I remember that art style. It's not
very good.
No,
it just kind of. It's very boring, and then it just kind of ends, and it's like, oh, I guess she's like a gravure idol or something while in high school. That's disgusting. Okay.
All right, we'll sell it.
It's Shaft. That's the sell, basically. There's nothing else to really sell it on. This might be, I think this is like the first like Shaft production where like they are like the main studio involved. Like they've been like a studio since like
I remember something like that. I think it is like their first main.
Yeah, which I think is probably why we watched it, because this is like them going from being like a support studio to like, oh, now they're doing OVAs, and their first OVA fucking sucked. I mean, I guess, you know,
it is a very 90s. Art style.
I don't remember looking very bad, but obviously now, ever since like the early mid 2000s, Shaft has become very defined by Akiyuki Shinbo's style. This is not that, to say the least. This is like 20 years before that. So I don't know. It's there for like Shaft completionists. There's not really much else to sell it based on that. It's not very good.
Well,
who directed this actually? Have they done?
They've done some stuff. I was just looking at that. They did like.
I don't see many credits though. They have a credit on AnyList for Pokemon storyboard.
Yeah, they've done a lot of storyboarding. They're not a director. They directed Sailor Senshi Venus 5.
Oh my. Episode 1. This is a hentai.
It's a hentai.
Oh, it's Studio Arms that tracks.
But they've done storyboards on Ghost Hunt and De Grey Man and.
Okay. Follow up that, bitch.
I got Kodocha.
Oh.
Did we talk about this when we had that Kodocha girl on?
Talk about Kodocha? I think
surely
so.
Surely we did. Like
Yes. Yes, we did, as a matter of fact. We talked about it quite a bit.
Okay. I won't do that one then.
Go listen to that episode, goddamn, and then watch Kodocha. It's delightful.
See, this was the secret. This is why we're now we can go tell people to go listen to our back catalog.
Go listen to our back catalog.
Listen to us talk about Kodocha for an hour and 20 minutes. but I guess I gotta sell us on Clear Card, not the original Card Capture Sakura, but the sequel Clear Card.
Yeah, the Sailor Moon Crystal kind of thing.
No.
Oh, is this not what that is?
No. This is not Sailor Moon Crystal situation. Sailor Moon Crystal is like a more proper adaptation of the manga from the original 90s anime.
Yeah.
Cardcaptor Sakura did not need that. This is a sequel to the original TV series. So this is... It's very odd because, I mean, obviously the original TV series takes place in 1997, roughly-ish. it might be 1995, whatever. I know it's produced in 1997, 1998, but I don't know. It's just like that time period. So like this takes place basically like a year or two late. Like she's just in middle school. She was in elementary school in the first season, so she's in middle school now. But it takes place in modern day. So like they have cell phones and stuff. It's very weird. Like when they pull out like a smartphone or something, you're like, oh, that's weird. it's more shoujo-y, I would say, than the, like, obviously the original one's kind of more magical girl. This is still a magical girl, but this leans a lot more into like the, her being kind of more, less of like a kid and more of like a becoming an adult, growing and kind of exploring the, her relationship with Shaolong.
I don't know who that is.
Lee Kun? Lee?
Shenron?
Shenron?
The dragon from Dragon Ball?
No. Her boyfriend in Cardcaptor Sakura is Purunga, the other dragon from Dragon Ball. The Namekian one.
I haven't gone that far. Sorry, I've only seen like 11 episodes of Dragon Ball.
They spoilers for Cardcaptor Sakura. She ends up starting to date Lee at the end of that one. And so this is like kind of exploring that relationship a bit more. It's not straight romance. So it's not like it's like a, they're like going on dates all the fucking time, but they do spend time together and stuff. They do go on like outings, stuff like that. So it's interesting to see her kind of more grown up and matured, because in the original, she's very like, I'm not a kaiju, and has like that kind of cute aspect of her where she gets mad very easily. That's kind of less prevalent in this because she's obviously maturing as a character. For Clear Card specifically, they introduce a new rival character, which is not actually been resolved. They're supposed to be getting a second season that has not come out yet. But I liked that character okay. Really, it's just kind of a continuation of Cardcaptor Sakura. So I'm pretty sure if you like Cardcaptor Sakura, you've probably already just seen Clear Card. I guess this is a sell for anybody that has not seen Cardcaptor Sakura and is planning on not watching Clear Card. It's like, go watch both. It's cute though.
I pulled up the 1994 adaptation of the Kenji Miyazawa story, The Life of Cusco Budori.
Cusco Budori? Have I seen that one?
I think so. It's directed by Ryutaro Nakamura. Yeah.
I'm just getting The Emperor's New Groove, Cusco.
G-U-S-K-O-U. Space Budori.
I heard Cusco, not Cusco. I have not seen this.
Cusco. No, you gave it a 5 out of 10.
Fuck, have I seen
this? Not the one where they're cats. Not the one where they're cats.
Oh, I was like, I have not seen this.
No. The one where they're just like regular people. No, we need to watch the one where they're cats.
Oh, this still. One. I do vaguely remember this one. Remind me.
It's Kenji Miyazawa. It's strong environmentalist themes. What I remember about it is it's basically this kid kind of goes off on his own and is a scientist. I forget what problem exactly he solves. Maybe more like multiple problems, because he's like, is it helping them with like fertilizer to like grow their plants and stuff? Yeah, I think he may do a variety of things now that I'm like thinking back on it. The main reason, I mean, obviously it's Kenji Miyazawa. So if you like Kenji Miyazawa, go watch it. But it's also Ryutaro Nakamura. So if you like Serial Experiments Lane or Kino no Tabi, I think it's worth checking out just for that. Because this might be, I think this is like a second. Let me see. Yeah, so this is after the Tomcat movie. So this is like right after. Maybe this is like a year later. Let me see. Yeah, that was 1994, and then this was the same year. Okay. Yeah, I guess he just directed two movies in the same year. I guess what I would say is that I'm going to recommend this by recommending something else. Go watch Spring and Chaos. And then if you liked Spring and Chaos and you like Ryotaro Nakamura, then go watch this, basically. Because this is more or less like, it touches on a lot of the same things that like Spring and Chaos does, because Spring and Chaos is like a kind of like a biography of Kenji Miyazawa. So it focuses like on his like, you know, roles like a scientist, you know, kind of quote unquote scientist living in like rural Japan and stuff and trying to like help the people around him. And obviously that stuff ends up getting reflected in his stories like Gusuke Midori. So that's more or less what the story is about, at least as far as memory serves. There's some big climactic ending where I think like the earth is blowing up or something. I don't quite remember what happens. But he has to like deal with that at the end. So yeah, it's a fun story. I remember enjoying it.
I vaguely remember that. It was okay.
It's a nice to look at movie. I'm like scrolling back through it. I'm like, yeah, no, this is like a good, I mean, the quality of this fucking riff on YouTube, and I don't know if there's a better quality version available, is terrible, but even through that, it's still a good, still pretty good looking. Maybe we'll get, I mean, there may already be, let me see. Is there an HD release of this movie? Hold on. Gusukobudori. It's the 2012 movie. Is this the 2012 movie? That one just doesn't say. And there's, okay. Is this the 2012 movie? I have no idea. I think I'm only seeing a VHS release. I don't think there's been a proper HD release of this movie, unfortunately, which is a goddamn shame. Hopefully someday there will be.
You seem to really like this is a Kenji Miyazawa story.
Yeah.
You
I seem, like Kenji Miyazawa. Yeah.
You seem to like his stuff. You like Spring and Chaos a lot.
I really Spring and Chaos is one of my favorite things. What else? There's like however many adaptations of Restaurant of Many Orders. I like the anime. I guess I should say I like the anime adaptation. I don't think I've ever read any of his stuff. I'd like to. I think I've like tried looking into him. Like, okay, where can I read this stuff? And there's like so many different books and translations. And I'm like, well, I guess I'll figure out which one is best at some point. I'm going to put this problem off till later. Or I'll just learn Japanese and read the original Japanese.
So I got Kirara. Do you remember this one?
Let me see. Oh, good fucking God. Typing this shit in one-handed. Let me see. Oh, God, this one. Yeah, no, now I'm remembering. Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah, no, the fucking ghost one. Holy fucking shit. Yeah, this was fucking weird.
It was weird. I liked it, though. It's kind of,
I like, remember it being fun.
I mean, you can't complain about her being underage. She's dead. Also, I'm pretty sure they're all adults.
Pedophilia. Listen, necrophilia overwrites pedophilia.
Is it still necrophilia if they're a ghost and not like a corpse?
That's a good question. That's a question for Zach Bagans of Ghost Adventures.
I was thinking more like Patrick Swayze from Ghost.
Patrick Swayze. Dan Aykroyd. Doesn't Dan Aykroyd get blown by a ghost in like the Ghostbusters movie?
I'm pretty sure it's alluded to that.
Yeah, I think I remember like a shot at like a ghost like undoes his pants or something and it shows his like face and I'm like, oh,
blew his ectoplasm all over the place.
He blew his ectoplasm. Yeah, so wait, what happened? So yeah, she dies and is like gets turned into a ghost and it is like trying to like romance the fucking guy. No, they get sent back in time. Yeah. And she's like trying to like romance the fucking guy. The guy that she was in love with again, but as like a 16-year-old. Right?
Yeah, like it was an interesting dynamic. Like I feel like I want to watch it again, honestly.
Kinda. I remember being like very like, wow, that's fucking wild.
Fucking weird. How long is the manga? 40 shit. Yeah, this is like one that maybe one day I'll get bored enough. I'll rewatch this and then go read the full manga. It's only 6 volumes. It's not, I mean, that's like a 3-hour read, if that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how many volumes?
6.
Yeah, you could do that pretty easily.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's what, 2 volumes an hour basically is the average, I think.
Yeah.
I really like the character designs. It has an interesting premise that makes for some interesting dynamics in characterization. It's a non-conventional adult romance.
I think when we're selling a lot of these OVAs, so you have to keep in mind is these are like 1 episode long. They're like 30, 40, maybe 50 minutes at most.
Yeah.
So we just like kind of watch them as like singular experiences, and they're not like, they're generally not the most like, wow, this was profound or this is outlandish or whatever. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about with One Punch Man earlier, where a lot of these are made almost as like promotional material. It's like, hey, we want to promote this manga. We don't necessarily want to do like a full TV series. Let's just do a single episode OVA, get it on store shelves. Someone will pick it up, watch it. And if they're intrigued, they can then go and, you know, pick up the manga.
Yeah.
So that's how I look at a lot of these things. And if it just offers like a fairly like overall enjoyable experience, even if it's not like, I'm not thinking about it a ton afterwards. And I'm going to be real with you. The reason I forget a lot of these is because I'm not thinking about them afterwards. If I like am thinking about something quite a bit, for better or worse, and I end up talking about it with someone, I remember it way more than if it's like something that I just like I watched and I was like, that was fun. And then I don't think about it much afterwards.
Yeah, I get that. I think that's part of the reason why
that's why
so many seasonals, because like I would just talk about it all the time as it was airing.
That's why I don't remember. That's why I don't remember a lot of Conan episodes, because I'm like, that was a fun mystery. Oh, time for the next mystery. Like, it would leave a lasting impact on me. Usually, sometimes they do. And those are either like more important episodes or episodes where I'm like, that is so stupid. All right. Can we do? Let's see. Here, let me pull up one more, and we can probably. Probably call it a night. Oh, this will be great. The Golden Bird.
Oh, yeah. That was a really good one.
This movie's awesome. I say movie. Again, it's only like 52 minutes. The animation, though, in this is fucking insane. So what The Golden Bird is it's basically just like the anime equivalent of a children's storybook. So things are very like, you know, simplistic and childish looking. You know, very much something like, yeah, you open up a picture book and like these are the kinds of things that you could expect to see. But then it is beautifully animated. The whole thing is just absolutely gorgeous to look like. There's like some of the animated sequences in this, like there's a fight towards the end where they're fighting this giant robot. It's like giant golem thing and like they're running around it. And it's like a shot that you would see in Attack on Titan. But there's no CG, and it looks absolutely like, I remember like watching this Injustice, and I, you know, this kind of ties into what I mean, where like I've thought about this so much since that cut specifically stood out to me so fucking much, because I was just like, holy shit, this looks so fucking awesome.
If people watch like YouTube videos, I'm sure they've seen that cut, because like if anyone. I feel like I've seen it in multiple videos, even if they're not talking about Golden Bird. They just were like,
yeah.
Old anime, you should look good. And then they use that clip.
Really? Are boomers are like retro anime fetishists citing Golden Bird? I feel like this isn't a very well-known movie.
It's not, but I swear I have seen it numerous times. Like not like
maybe.
a lot. Like I have not seen it.
I've seen it like posted on Twitter by like a retro anime aesthetic account on occasion.
Something like that.
I do not remember what the fucking story is though. I remember the main villain being very fun to watch because she was just like this kind of like evil witch character, kind of like who's the villain from Emperor's New Groove? She kind of reminded me of that character.
Esmeralda? Is that what her? No.
Something like that. No. I think that's the woman from Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yzma.
Yeah. She kind of has that vibe in the movie. I think there's like a musical sequence. There may be multiple musical sequences. I don't remember off the top of my head. But the musical sequence, her, that again, is just wonderfully well animated. I highly, highly recommend this. Again, I don't remember the story. I don't really care about the story. The story is probably basic as shit, if I'm going to be honest, but
goddamn it. Isn't it a Hans Christian Andersen story?
It's a Brothers Grimm story.
Brothers Grimm, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, the visual aesthetic really reminds me of a... Have you ever seen the Thief and the Cobbler movie? Like, unfinished one?
I've not seen it in full. I've only seen, like, certain segments of them, like... You know, the card segment, or like them like running around, like the checkerboard stuff and doing all the weird manipulations.
Well, that's what the aesthetic really reminds me of, is like that checkerboard stuff from that.
Mm-hmm.
Which
I can definitely see that.
It might not be a favorable comparison in the fact that like The Thief and the Cobbler is a fucking insane production, but it is a very flattering one that you even put it in the same conversation, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, the Thief and the Cobbler was such like an ambitious movie that it literally did not get made.
Literally did not get finished. It's just storyboards.
But this does definitely like touch on like similar sorts of aesthetic sensibilities, I would say. I feel like, if you're like a fucking like Sakuga guy, yeah, this is like a must watch, basically.
Yeah, I really love fucking Golden Bird.
Yeah, no, there's like, you could just, every frame in this movie, you could just screenshot as well. It looks so fucking good.
I guess the last one I pulled up, I got Shoujo Cassette. I don't think funny, because we did a video for this.
For some reason, I thought I heard you say Shoujo Cassette, like a cassette tape. I was like,
yeah,
Shoujo Cassette.
Shoujo Cassette, you know.
Yeah, the Shoujo Cassette. not to be confused with the other cassette anime, which is, what is it?
Les Mis?
Yeah, the Les Mis one.
Yeah, we made that joke in the video that never came out.
Yeah, the video that never came out. Hey, now that you're unemployed, it's time to get back to work on that video, fucker.
That specific one?
Yeah. Yeah, that specific.
We'll see, maybe. Maybe I'll just put it up as a fucking podcast on Patreon.
Attempt to describe, the portrait of Petite Cassette.
It's anime's Lolita.
It is the most Akiyuki Shinbo anime ever made, basically.
Oh yeah.
Obviously his style, like it very much encapsulates. I feel like in the 2000s, Shinbo came across, like, Shinbo had a very specific transfixion with these kinds of like Lolita style stories of like an older guy,
Tsukiyomi mood phase,
falling in love with like a younger girl who may or may not be a vampire or just have some sort of like supernatural element to them. So yeah, you have Moon Phase, you have Shoujo Cassette, I would put Monogatari in that category as well.
Where's
what else was there? Rosen the Vampire Bund would be another one.
Yeah, that's what I was to say. That one.
I
remember we watched this as a group watch, Injustice, and I did not.
Yeah.
Because like people hype stuff up all the time, and I just figured this was gonna be like pretty good. I didn't think it would be bad by any means.
Sure.
But I don't, like, especially 2000s OVAs, they don't have the greatest.
You're taking a gamble for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because this is like this is only like a few years before the like the home video market crash as well. That basically killed off OVAs.
Yeah. I remember we were watching it and I was actually like, first episode was good. I was like, oh, this is good. And it just progressively got better.
Well, you literally get to that, like, in that first episode, that that crucifixion sequence. And I'm like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah, well, so, like, the first episode is good. And it's good in, like, a, oh, this is kind of cool way. But, like, it transcends that in the next two in a way that you're like, oh, this is, like, legitimately good.
Three or four episodes?
It's three. It's a solid Quake 3.
Yeah. So then the second one, and then the third one, I feel like the third one is very weird because in some ways it's a departure, but then it's also very much an encapsulation of what the story is about.
Yeah. Well, in a very direct way.
There's like all these like weird twists, and the story is kind of difficult to follow. Like, you really got to pay attention. And even then, it's very inscrutable. You almost seem to watch it twice because like there's this stuff going on that you're like, when you're watching it for the first time, you're trying to be like, just follow along basically. And then when you go back through it, you're able to pick up on more things.
Well, that's why
this is what they're doing here.
I was going to say, Shinobu's, like, direction style really shines.
Shinobu's direction?
Shinobu's, yes. Shinbo's direction style really shines. Because, like, he's able to, like, get across basically what you're supposed to be feeling in a way that doesn't get in the way of the story at all. So, like, it is a horror series. And, like, when you hear that, you're kind of like, oh, fucking, like, Uzumaki kind of horror. It's like, it's not an overt... Like, obviously, like, it is... stylistically gothic or whatever in that kind of horror sense, but it is very uncomfortable in the sense of like what you start kind of come to terms with, start thinking about as you're watching
it. Well, it's similar to how Lolita is a fucking horror story basically.
Yeah,
like it's basically, because it is basically this like story of obsession and like possession, not in terms of like, oh, I'm possessed by a ghost, but like possessing another human being like as an object. Yeah.
It's very voyeuristic, and you see that a lot in like the visual, like imagery, like obviously no.
Oh yeah.
You might not necessarily, I mean, you'll see it, but you're not going to tie it necessarily directly tied into what's happening unless you're kind of really thinking about it. It doesn't take a lot to like pick up on it, but it becomes very apparent by like the end, obviously. Yeah. Like you see a lot of like eye imagery, a lot of like glass.
A lot of eye imagery, a lot of like shots through glass and stuff.
Yeah. And then there's obviously the
distorted perspectives.
There's obviously the kind of setup where he is like watching this girl that lives in, it's not really clear.
It's if a it's, cup, isn't it?
It's like a cup. It's like he's obsessed with like the shininess of this cup, and he notices like,
yeah, it's very weird to say the least.
Yeah.
And there's this girl in the cup who was murdered, and they develop a relationship basically, and because there was all this drama surrounding because there's all this like trauma surrounding her and stuff that in order to, kind of break her out of her container, essentially, he needs to take on like all of this like demonic punishment, basically.
Yeah. It's very, complimentary piece to like Video Girl Eye or something, which less Video people Girl have seen.
Yeah.
Video Girl Eye that they have fucking Shoujo cassette, so it's not a very intuitive,
pleasant of a watch as well.
They're both like, very like moe coded, right? Like we talked about it with Patrick when we had him on. Like,
yeah,
they both kind of touch on these themes of like one sided, parasocial sort of relationships with like fictional characters. Yeah.
Kind of, because that's where that last episode then kind of
challenges
flips
that
on its head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's like now this fictional character is like developing a parasocial relationship with you in a sense, and what that means.
It's very similar. It had a very similar kind of like ending in that regard to Magical Girl Destroyers. Like that also kind of delved into like similar themes of that. Everyone kind of fucking also hated that though.
I mean, it has a similar ending to Video Girl Eye.
Sort of, not really. Like, because Video Girl Eye is very uplifting, like Gurren Lagann esque fucking ending. Shoujo Cassette. I mean, I guess spoilers a bit since we want to talk about it. I mean, if you remember the third one, She's dead in the second
yeah.
one.
Yeah. No, yeah, no, no. Yeah, well, that's it. You get this beautiful
kind of like sequence
of her. Yeah. Which is that how the second one ends or how the third one starts? I forget.
It's how the second one ends. And then the third one starts with her coming back. Quote unquote.
Yeah. And well, because it's what's his like friend or like sis, who, the other girl, basically.
The one that has a crush on him.
Yeah. Is like in a coma and is kind of. Again, this sounds like a fucking insane. And trust me, this is a normal way of describing this OVA. Her life force is basically being leached by
a painting.
A demonic reincarnation of the girl.
No, it's a demonic painting.
It's a demonic painting of the girl, right?
Yeah, she's trying to like enter her body essentially, and because like she had a crush on the guy. But it's like this weird interplay because like he recognizes it's her in like a performative set, like in the sense like this looks like her, what's her name, is this
but
Cassette?
This but this like world that they're in, it feels artificial.
There's not as far as like the personality,
it's a metaphor for resurrecting your dead loved ones with AI.
Resurrecting with AI, yes, that's it. It's all, well, I think in the context of this, I think it does kind of flirt with the themes of like consumer versus like producer, as far as like character ownership in a way, because like you think of like what a waifu is. If I have a waifu, that character, the character that is built up in my head as the identity of someone that would be my waifu, even if like I'm not like doing some weird like schizo shit where I actually like role play out in my head that we are together kind of thing.
Well, it's still like my impression of idolatry, that character, basically.
Yeah, well, my impression of that character is different than like the real character. Like, even if it is like completely in line with that character, if I explained it to you, the actual impression that I have in my head is not the same as the impression that you have in your head, right? The way you see Mami Tomoe is different from the way I see Mami Tomoe, even though we could describe the exact same scenario and you're like, well, this is literally
the
case.
Dude, it's just like her.
It's just like her. Exactly.
And much like her, it ends with him fucking burning shit down.
It's this is a very interesting complimentary piece to Video Girl Eye and the Moe Manifesto and her and what's the other one? Lars and the Real Girl.
Lars and the Real Girl. And then also, everything Shinbo was doing in the 2000s, it feels like.
In 2000, that's a different level. That's like that's not the same.
Yeah, that's a different, that's like a, like an auteur level, which is very funny to think of it, because this is, in a sense, an auteur work in that the project was put together with the explicit intention of, we're going to showcase the Akiyuki Shinbo style completely unchained and unfettered. And there's a hilarious interview. Akiyuki Shinbo seems like such a wholesome, nice guy because he's in this interview and like talking to him about it. And the whole interview is him just downplaying his own contributions and just talking about how great everyone else was.
Oh yeah, you really had a really good sense of this. Oh no, that wasn't me. No,
that was actually the colorist, and I couldn't honestly, I was watching like the colorist and like the character designer work and just kind of like watching them, just feeling like, man, these guys are great. And I think at one point, literally, the interviewer is like, okay, you're being too humble at this point.
No, I'm incompetent. I'm worthless. I'm point like it's like Shinbo, please.
Shinbo, please. No, it's literally everyone else. I'm just here having a nice time.
Why am I even interviewing at this point? I don't know. I didn't do anything.
I don't know. Why am I here? Who are you? Who am I? What are we doing here? What's going on? Can you help me? It's dark.
Yeah,
I can't see anything. I'm cold.
Shoujo Cassette looks great. No. Great sense of direction. Has awesome fucking themes. And
just watch it and just kind of keep your finger on the screenshot button on your keyboard.
It does have the early 2000s CGI, but it pulls it off pretty well.
I think it pulls it off phenomenally because it's creepy as shit.
Yeah.
Like the giant fucking skull and shit. I'm like, oh, this is like, it has, it's like so aesthetically broad that it feels like the CG just ends up becoming a part of that aesthetic as a result.
Yeah. Maybe one day the Weeb Crew video talking about it will. Because I actually did go into the parallels between this and werewolf. No,
you started doing animations and stuff.
Yeah. I think the format, I don't know. I don't know how well the format does. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah. Who gives a fucking shit? Now, this has been your top 10 anime recommendations of all time.
That was not what that was. I don't know what that was.
That was absolutely what that was. Shut your fucking mouth.
I just thought, we talked about Japan and traveling last time. We just have a whole episode where we just talk about anime, except the season's not all that great. So it's like, what are we talking about? We just talk about the anime we've already seen. We've seen thousands of anime. Just talk some of those.
We've seen thousands of anime between the two of us and can remember some of them.
I can remember most of them.